School PR professionals spend a few weeks a year participating in professional development and networking, if they're lucky. We use this time to connect through conversation and shared experiences. Conversation is one of the best parts of our jobs, but then we go back to our daily work and the time for connection begins to wear off.
Welcome to School PR Happy Hour. During our time together, our goal is to continue a sense of collaboration and shared conversation throughout the whole year.
We are a community of communicators that lean on each other in hard times and times of celebration and learn from each other regularly.
This podcast gives us the chance to get to know each other better by sharing our passions about furthering education one story at a time.
Whether you are listening on your morning commute or winding down after work, we are so glad you're here and look forward to learning alongside you today.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into another episode of School PR Happy Hour. My name's Justin Deering, and I'm a communication strategist for CISO Communications. Before we get into today's topic, I want to congratulate and thank our new co-host, Becca Latham, for an amazing launch day with her interview with Trent Allen. Trent, thank you for coming on the show and sharing your vision for INSPR and building excitement for next year in Seattle. Today's topic is one that fascinates me. A couple weeks ago, we got an email from INSPRA saying that there are recordings and sessions available to watch after the seminar if you missed them. As you know, when you're at these conferences, you get into conversations and you start networking, talking to your friends you haven't seen in a long time, and you look up and an hour or an hour and a half has gone by and you've actually missed a session. As I was scrolling through to see what exactly I may have missed while I was at INSPRA, I rolled across one presentation that just jumped off the page, and I was like, I have got to have a conversation further on this. Now, I don't know if it's because in our household, we love true crime podcasts, or we love these documentaries that Netflix putting out about all these different crimes and things that are going on, but the presentation from Sandra Wallen, APR, on profiling like an FBI agent is just fascinating to me. I'm excited for today's conversation. I hope you learned something and find something you can apply to your district and apply to your communications as you're engaging with your community. So let's get into it. Let's have this conversation. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for supporting School PR Happy Hour.
Hi, this is Dr. Jill at Class Intercom, and we're honored to once again be the official sponsor of School PR Happy Hour. I spent 30 years in education as a teacher and administrator, so I know the challenges schools face when it comes to social media. Class Intercom makes approvals, moderation, analytics, and archival easy. With our support, schools and districts are able to champion student voice and tell impactful stories that engage their communities. To learn more, contact me or the rest of our team at classintercom.com.
All right, Sandra Wallen, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for bringing this topic forward to INSPRA and then recording it. I watched it, like I said in the intro, fascinated by this topic. How are you doing today? How's school going? Is school getting rolling again for you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me. Our school year is off to a great start. I feel as though, as PR people, though, we create the calm. We don't necessarily get to enjoy all the calm, but, you know, smoothly for everyone else is the goal of that, and I think we accomplished that this year.
Congratulations on a successful start. As you know, on our show, we always like to open with your story. We love to hear about your journey to school PR, how you landed in the district you're at, and then a little bit about the district you're working in. So talk to me a little bit about your story and, you know, brag about yourself a little bit.
So I took a non-traditional path, which I feel every person that I've talked to in PR has done the same thing. I went to school for business administration. I worked at Stickley Furniture for a couple of years in inventory and marketing, and I loved the creative parts of it, and I hated the rest. So I met my future husband, who was a teacher, and I thought, that sounds really awesome to go into that and inspire kids. So I went into teaching, and then in year 7 and 8, I got, you know, the itch to do a little bit more, so I went and I got my admin degree, and in talking to my superintendent, I had talked to her about my basically history of business administration and marketing, and she had wanted to establish a communications position in our district, and it was just right time, right place, fell perfectly into it. So she created the position, that I took today, and we're one of the first districts in our entire region that has a one-person PR shop dedicated. A lot of our districts contract through BOCES. So in New York, we have the Board of Cooperative Educational Services, and they kind of oversee nine plus districts and help them with services if they're too small to do it on their own. But even though we only have 1,800 plus students here, we do have our own communications department of one. And it's a really forward-thinking thing that has brought up to speed a lot of people in the region about how important it is to have that calming voice, to have that person dedicated to being almost that new family liaison. You know, family liaison was the buzzword a while ago, and now it's having that communications person that's tying the knots and gathering up all of the little loose ends and creating that powerful impact that schools have been looking for. So a little non-traditional, but I'm thrilled to be in the position that I'm in and absolutely love the district that I'm working for. And then to further my APR journey, or my PR journey, I got my APR just this year, was pinned at NSPRA and met an entirely amazing group of people that are pushing the boundaries of helping others, mentoring others, getting everyone up to speed on why this is such an important profession, and really giving credence and authority to the work that we do. And that's what inspired the presentation that I created.
Awesome. Well, first off, congratulations on your APR. As someone who's currently working on theirs, I know how much work it is, and it is at times frustrating and other times very fun and other times not fun at all, but we're getting there.
Good for you.
So we have very similar paths, because I was a teacher before I went to school PR as well. So you're probably the second or third former teacher, now school PR person, that's been on the show. So I have to ask, what subject did you teach?
English. Middle school.
English. My wife was a high school English teacher. Now she's an assistant principal. So she I taught media tech and radio broadcasting and speech. Nice. So it kind of worked out.
Yeah.
So. Well, let's get into this presentation, this topic that you have been working on and learning about and presenting about. I said in the intro, you know, I don't know whether it's because my wife and I are so into Netflix documentaries about murders or what, or crime or what it is, but this one jumped off the page and I was like, I need to have a conversation about this. It's so creative. It's such a great idea. Talk to me about where you came up with the idea, where you came up with the research that you decided to do for this, and then just why it was so something you wanted to do and wanted to present about.
Absolutely. So I, too, am a crime aficionado. I thought it was a great moment, you know, in our culture that a lot of people were connecting to. So that's where I came up with the, you know, profile like an FBI agent. But the roots of the presentation was a workshop that I had to do for our administrative team. And being the first person regionally to step into this position and being the first person in our district leadership team that wasn't directly tied to educating students was a hard sell for a lot of people. And PR is kind of like that spin doctor mentality that people think about, oh, well, you know, you're just sending out people's messages, or you're just spinning, you know, bad things that happen. And nobody really had an appreciation for the work. And so in my presentation, one of the first slides is, you know, how people value PR. And it's, well, can you make this pretty? Or, well, can you just make a video? Or, well, we should probably celebrate this. Is that something you can do, without thinking about the hours and days and weeks that it takes to pull off an event that's good, or to create a video that really reaches out to your community? So I wanted to help our leadership team see that it's not just, you know, as I said in my presentation, it's not glitter and glue sticks. That's not what we do. And for people who are getting their PR, you know that one of the three most important things you do is you advise and anticipate. And you're a strategic partner in the development of ideas. You're not just a person that comes in at the end and says, oh, thank you for these three bullet points. I will create an icon to represent them in your report. Which is, I think, how instinctually people like to pull in the PR person, is just make this look pretty. And so I did this presentation to help them understand that when you give me something, that's not the lens that I'm looking at it through. I'm looking at it through, you know, 50% of the people in the United States have a seventh grade or below literacy level. And so you keep using words that they probably are not going, you know, those $5 words that they're not going to understand. And when we send out things at 6 o'clock at night and it looks like a white paper on some scientific process and they're like, well, people aren't responding to it. Well, that's also a piece of the science behind communicating. So I wanted to make it something tangible for them that they could see, this is why we should do this. This is why I'm grateful to have somebody doing this for us. And this is why this is going to help our district and help our students and help our families and the community as a whole. And it was so well received by our Board of Education, by our leadership team, that they understood the science behind communication. And, you know, you're not just an English person correcting grammar. You're really diluting and distilling a message into something people can take and run with. And so I thought to myself, I wanna share this with other people because it helped change how people saw me in my position as a professional in the district. And I wanted to empower everybody else who is doing this with those same tips to be able to say, well, not that I think you should use a word differently here, but well, do you realize that 60% of our community members are seventh grade or below reading level? And this is at a 15 on the scale. So what can we do here to bring this down a little bit was really powerful.
Well, so going back to something you said there, I mean, understanding your community, understanding who's there, who's your audience, that all, I mean, the APR process, we're talking research right now. This is hardcore research. You got to understand who you're talking to, how to engage with them. So take me through some of those early, like, you know, the demographics that you need to know, national, state, local level, that kind of help start to shape before you even jump into these psychological concepts. You got to understand who you're talking to first. So let's just talk about that basic research of the demographics of your community. Why is that important? How do you go about finding that? And just what advice do you have to folks that are getting started in that? Because there are a lot of districts that we hear from on the show and in my current role at CISO that they're like, we don't really know who we're talking to. Mm-hmm. And that's like, we got to start right there. So talk to me a little bit about that part of your research that you did here.
Sure. So that's aligning with the FBI and their profiling inputs. So they really gather any information that they can to make their case. And that's where I started. I gathered anything that I could find. I looked at national trends. That was really helpful in terms of how, for 16 and below, our country is shifting to be much more diverse culturally than our constituents who are 65 and older. And so I could use that piece of data to say, you know, we're not on Facebook right now. Well, we weren't in, 2018 when I started. And that's where the moms are that you want to communicate with right now. And you can show them. I use data from Pew. Pew has fantastic social media data that can show where age groups are, where genders are, where people are in terms of which social media platform that they use. Our district wanted a Twitter account. And so I use that Pew data to say, 18 to 20% of the people that we want to be involved are on Twitter, whereas Facebook has 65 to 70%. So that was great data. On the state level, on the national and state, any census data that you can pull in that shows the average age of your community. It also definitely has literacy information in there. Poverty information is important to know because that links back to literacy and starting to plant the seeds to show how everything is interconnected was really important to be able to say that national data, almost half of the United States reads at 75% or below. And then I drill down into our state data where only 28% of New York State adults have a higher education beyond high school. And you start to connect the dots. And then in Oneida County, where we work, we've got an incredibly high poverty level, which links back to the literacy, which we've talked about, because there are studies about how the two are combined. So the chipmunks in the cheeks, just getting all the information, taking it, keeping it together. And then as you gather more, tying it into a picture for people is extremely helpful. And anytime you can say, well, according to our statewide data, or start a sentence that way, people are going to hear you in a much different light versus, well, I think we should do an extra newsletter because, right. You know, according to all of the data that we're getting, people 65 and older aren't accessing these. So if 54% of our community is 65 and older and 75% of our community don't have kids in school, how else are we reaching them other than we need to create another newsletter? And yes, it's going to cost $5,000 annually. However, do you want to reach 75% of our budget voters? Or do you want to leave that on the table up to chance and word of mouth, which is how they're getting it now? So in terms of gathering data, anything you can grab in, but also then I started to push out with surveys. And that's where you get that really powerful data that tells you exactly what people want. And, you know, unfortunately, those start to take time and money. But if you can get them to follow you with the data that you're pulling and the connections you're making for them, a lot of times they'll want the data in at the back end, and they'll be willing to pay for the time or the money it will take to gather that really in the weeds data versus the 30,000 foot view.
My favorite part about the research process is like when you said, when you start a sentence with according to our state data, mm-hmm. and you drop a bomb and everybody in the room's like, that's not real. And you're like, no, here's the receipts. Here's yes. what shows the state, local, everything shows. I remember we had that conversation about reading level in a district, mm-hmm. and I was in a district that profiled pretty similar to what you're saying. And, you know, it was like, we need to take this down a notch. We're using some big words that, you know, I have a college degree, and some of these I'm like, what do you mean?
You know?
Yes. So we had to take it down. But then within 3 months, I moved to a different community in a different district where the profile was completely different. Mm-hmm. And we could use some more of those because it was a highly educated, we called it a CEO community. So you could use a little different language and understand it. And if you came too soft, they would be like, this is, what are we teaching our kids?
Yes.
Like if we can't even, yeah. Yes. So it's so intriguing and interesting to think about how I literally moved 10 miles down the street and everything was different. So you can't just go cookie cutter and assume mm-hmm. that your data matches your neighbor's data. Mm-hmm. It could be a 2 mile difference on the map, but it could be a huge difference in your audience and how they accept things.
Absolutely. And that goes into, I feel bad for districts that have 30,000, you know, students in them become, at that point, you can't have a district-wide policy. You've got to target individual communities with that. And I think you're so on the nose with being 2 miles away and being a world of difference. And that just goes to how important our jobs are. And when people come to me and say, I want to send this out, and how do I do that? And I can say, well, it's for this community. We're going to need to communicate it using X method because that's where they are. And we're going to need to do it at this grade level because that is going to look, I mean, we're going to get into that cognitive fluency, which I talked about in my presentation, but if it looks untrustworthy, if it looks like it's too complicated to read, and that's the community that doesn't have that higher reading level, then you've lost them before you've even gotten your message to them. And so I think you're exactly right that you know, micro targeting different segments of the population, it's not just enough to say, we're going to send this out to our community, but understanding that, you know, I'm Vernon, Verona, Cheryl. So the Vernon and the Verona and the Cheryl community, very different. And just, again, I think speaks volumes to the power of what somebody in our jobs can do if they're paying attention to those things.
Well, you kind of transitioned there for me into these psychological concepts. Whenever you started talking about these on your video for Inspira, I literally could only think about Spencer Reed from Criminal Minds. And I was just like, so this is how his brain works at all times, because that's what I want, obviously, is I want to be able to, I mean, it's just fascinating. And I've said that word probably 10 times already in this episode, but it really is.
Hi friends, this is Kara Zachney and I'm a design specialist for CISO Communications. We are so excited to be a part of the School PR Happy Hour family, and we hope you learn as much from this show as we do. My role at CISO is to help our clients with their visual presence. It doesn't matter if we're working on a print mailer for an enrollment marketing campaign, custom animations for a referendum video, elements to help your website pop, or even creating a completely new visual brand for your favorite school PR podcast. We love working through the creative process and making your brand stand out. We have a talented team of creative pros who are eager to walk alongside you and help you in any way possible. At CISO Communications, we partner with districts to think about their communications strategically. If your school or district is interested in learning more about how we can work together, we would love to connect with you. CISO Communications is a division of CISO, which stands for Center for Effective School Operations, which also supports schools with transportation, HR, finance, and technology. Visit thecso.com and connect with us today, and be sure to follow us on our social channels at CISOComs. Let us help you rethink possible.
So let's just dive into these, and let's start with perceptual set theory and kind of the background there and kind of how you see that working and how it relates to school PR. And we'll work through these five and just kind of see where the conversation goes.
Sounds great. So I wanted to start with perceptual set because I had seen something, and I don't remember where it was. I wish I could give them credit. But, that the brain does things that you're not even aware that it does. I thought it was really important to bring to our leadership team that it's not, sometimes as leadership teams, we get really stuck on, well, we sent the message out and we don't give enough consideration to, were they in a space to hear it? Was it the right time for them to hear it? Can they access it? Do they have some preconceived notion? So I wanted to talk about how our brains miss things all the time, and we're genetically wired to do that because our brains need to focus on what is the most dangerous, what feels safe. And we're not, in the beginning of my presentation, I do a Kahoot and I have 100-person license. And so I say, I have 100 licenses. So if you get on, awesome, great. If you don't, partner up with somebody and I'm sorry. And you'd be surprised how quickly some people whip out their phones, like they have to be in the competition. They have to get into it. And then I kind of segue that into, that was the pet in the past, your prehistoric brain. You needed to be competitive because if you weren't, you were dead. And we haven't mm-hmm. lost that, unfortunately, after thousands of years, our brains are still wired that way. That if we see shadow, you flinch or you move a little bit if something crosses, you pay attention to that because your brain is worried that there's going to be a lion, that is going to pounce, or that something in a tree is going to come down at you, and it changes that shadow pattern. And so that was really what perceptual set was about, was that you can ignore details. And I don't know if you watched the presentation, but there's the monkey business illusion, where you mm-hmm. ask people to watch a video and count the number of times people in white shirts, there are white shirts and black shirts, the number of times people in white shirts pass a basketball between themselves. And people get so focused on making sure that they get the right answer of guesses or passes that they don't see this gorilla that passes right through the middle. And I remember seeing that in college and being like, no, that's a lie. There's no way. And then have it come back full circle and see that here. And recognize that your brain, when you're focused, you miss things that you don't even realize you miss. And how powerful is that to be able to harness in our communications, knowing how people can focus on things or miss things or how the brain is trained to. So with perceptual set, I tell people what you need to take away is people are creatures of habit. You need to make those habits for them. And you need to give them predictability, because if it's predictable, it's secure. If you send something out, like a message we did during COVID, it was 6 o'clock every Friday. We talked about the weather first. We talked about two important things that they needed to know for the upcoming week. And we did a fun national day. And that was it. If there was any other information, it was included in a link at the end. And that brings people security and comfort to know that at 6 o'clock, I'm going to get all the things for the next week. And you can tell it starts working mostly because of the negative feedback you're going to get when people are like, I don't need to hear a weather report every Friday. Maybe you don't, but you recognize the pattern of that's what we're starting with. And you know that you could rely on hearing that, which creates this sense of safety and security. And they tie that feeling back to your district, that your district is safe and it's secure. And that's why perceptual set is so important, because when people are selectively ignoring details in their world and things feel unsafe to them, and therefore they don't really want to do it, that whole perceptual set predictability makes you kind of like a guiding light or a beacon for people who are looking for that information. And that's what we want to do as district officials, is be that hub, that source of trusted information for our communities.
So with the, you know, the message you sent out during COVID, it makes me think of, we suggest and we advise districts across the country on newsletters a lot. Like, people come and say no one's reading them, especially staff. Staff's tired of hearing about it. So we have created, we've created a model that we call KDS. I've talked about it a couple times on the show, where it's a no do share. Mm-hmm. So here's some things you need to know. Here's some things I need you to do. And here's some things you can share. And here's who you can share it with. Like, even break it down to, these can go to your students. These can go to your parents. Mm-hmm. And we do that internally. And it is interesting that you said, you know, you'll know you're being successful when you get the negative feedback of, okay, I don't need to know that homecoming's in November because it is September. And I'm like, yeah, but you now know that I'm going to inform you of this. Yep. And we've done, in one of the districts I work primarily with, we've done one newsletter and got a couple emails that were like, what is this? We've never done this before. But the number of thank you so much for just giving it to us in a short, concise, digestible way, that we know we can go grab what we need. There's three links in the middle of things I need you to do. We find three things a month to do, whether it's a survey, whether it's submit your points of pride or something to that effect. So yeah, it works. And I'm interested to see, as we continue to grow and do this, how many more people are going to be tired of being told what to know, to do, and to share. Mm-hmm. But when the open rate's over 90, we have 250 employees and we have 500 opens, they're coming back to it. So it's working. The other thing from what you just said is, I watched the video and I think it's because of my ADHD. I saw the monkey, but also got the number of passes right.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
I really think it's because of, you know, my weird brain. That's so awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about cognitive fluency. You mentioned it earlier in an example earlier, but we're going to dive a little deeper into it and talk about that one. That one was one that really just, like, I was like, oh, this one's super interesting to me. So we may stick on this one for a minute. I don't
Absolutely. Know. Absolutely. Cognitive fluency, in a nutshell, says it doesn't matter what it is. If it looks easy to digest or understand, then people will be attracted to it and they will actually find it more attractive, they will be inclined to like it, and they'll be inclined to believe that it's true. And it's not even about the mental process of actually digging into the information or the data, but it's about the feeling that people associate with that process. And I thought that was really important to share with, when I did this, with our leadership team, because it doesn't matter what the actual text of the article is. When we're sending out a newsletter and it's a wall of text, it doesn't look accessible. It looks like, oh, I have to read a term paper to find out what's going on with the district. And so what I did was I pulled three of their little stories out, you know, because principals, you say, write a welcome letter. And they're like, oh, we're so excited. We get to do this, this, and this. And then it's filled with goals and bullets and so much stuff. And I just pulled out three of the stories. I got some big smiling faces for pictures. And I reorganized it into three different mini articles. And the overwhelming response that we got about the readability, about how it's now it's like a magazine that you read. And because people in the publishing industry have known this forever, there's a reason that there are call out quotes. And it's because you need to bring people into the article. You can't just put a wall of text in front of them and say, well, we gave you the information. I don't understand why you didn't know it. Well, I'd like to think a highly educated person. And when my son's school sends home, you know, that free and reduced lunch form, I start to get anxiety about it. And I know I'm going to be able to read it and I know I'm going to be able to figure it out, but it looks like a tax form. And it's terrifying upon initial review to even see something like that. And that's what kind of the old school way of sending out things was. So when we talk about cognitive fluency, it's basically just about, if it looks easy to understand, people will assume it's true and truthful. And honestly, that's what gets us into a lot of problems, I think, with misinformation today, is it's very easy to put a statistic out there. Well, like 80% of all statistics aren't actually statistics that are valid, but they see it and it looks easy and they can understand it and digest it. So they're inclined to believe that it's true. And that's why when I do the presentation, I talk about how using easy to read infographics, using pictures, it's not just, you know, for kindergarten anymore. It's about accessing everybody and where they are. At the end of the day, even if you're a highly educated parent, I don't have the brain power anymore to read through, you know, my son got a letter for chorus. It was just a wall of text. And it would have been better if she could just be like, picture of kids singing, the three dates that they need, you know, and maybe everything else at the end. But we have to be understanding of the fact that according to a study, I'm not staking anything on this, but people make up to 35,000 decisions a day. And decision fatigue is real. People can't be pouring through documents afterward. And that's a position that we're in, is as schools, we are what parents get at the end of the day. So after I'm done, you know, getting my kids ready in the morning, getting them on the bus, getting myself to work, full eight, I mean, let's be honest, we're PR people, in 10 to 12 hours of putting out fires and, you know, really distilling messages to send out to people. It's heavy mental work. And then I get home and I've got dinner and baths, and then I get into their backpacks. I don't have it in me for that anymore. So as schools, that cognitive fluency, it's really important for us to recognize kind of where we fall in the pecking order. It's nice to think that, well, we're educating your child. This should be the first thing you have 6 a.m. bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. You should be opening that folder and digesting the glorious information that we're sending you about your offspring. But that's not how the world works. So cognitive fluency can be really important in terms of that.
I when you were going through this in your presentation, as I was watching, what brought to mind for me was annual registration.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And how much of a bear that registering your kid for school can be. You know, we have a 10-year-old, she's in fifth grade. And up until this year, I was, you know, working 10 to 12 hours a day, yeah, and not home doing football, doing all, yeah, these things. So my wife handled a lot of that, mm-hmm, stuff for me. Now the roles have switched to where she's putting in super hours as assistant principal. And now I'm the person, and I look at it and I'm like, I'm the one that was in charge of communicating this in our old district. And this is not the way it should be. Mm-hmm. So I think taking, you know, cognitive fluency and taking that thought process and applying that to our student annual registration to make it look easy. The technology is there that pre-fills all the questions you're going to ask five,
yes,
times. Find it and use it. So it does not turn into a 2-hour process. It should be, hey, my kid's already gone to school. You have this information. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, unless we've moved, you know where we're at. So that's one area. And then another area on this one that I thought, like, outside of school PR, a great example of using this to your benefit. Working out is not fun. Like, a lot of people find it fun, but it's still, you got to go do it, right? You got to get out of your house, drive somewhere, and you got to go do it. A lot of people enjoy it. I don't, but we know, whatever. But there's a new gym, and it's a national gym, F45. And they put out 45-minute workouts, CrossFit style, but their marketing and the way they showcase it looks so fun. Yeah. It looks like you're going to go and you're not going to work out. You're just going to party and have fun with your friends and dance, but you're not dance the whole time, but you're working out, yeah, and having fun. But then you go do one workout and you realize, this is miserable, but you got me,
yes,
here, and you got me to pay it a ton, yeah, of money, so I'm going to come back. But they market it in a way, and they showcase it in a way, and they make it look fun and easy, mm-hmm, and people, I mean, it's the biggest, we just opened one here in our town probably 4 months ago, mm-hmm, and it is the largest populated gym in Mansfield right now because of the way they perceive, they put their image out of fun, quick, mm-hmm, you can get done in 45 minutes, we can burn 1,000 calories in 45 minutes, which is true, yeah. But it's just interesting hearing this, but seeing, as a marketing-minded person, mm-hmm, seeing their marketing and seeing what they're doing, like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're trying to convince me that this workout is fun, but knowing that there's a scientific theory behind, mm-hmm, that just changes the way you look at all that stuff. So this one was very interesting to me because I could think of so many just, boom, yep, they're doing that. I can see exactly, yeah, where this is coming from.
Also, I'm sorry. They also make it look easy, right? Because that, mm-hmm, for people who don't normally work out, that's a big barrier because that's a whole world of fitness and spandex and that people are really hesitant to get into, and that's a big part of, they made it look easy to get into that world, and that means that people felt safe trying to dip their toe into that world. And that's exactly what cognitive fluency, going right back to perceptual set, it looks predictable, it looks fun, it looks easy to do, therefore it feels safe to me, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. And I think that's exactly, you know, a way to get people to invest in something is It's easy, it's fun, and it's safe.
And it's when you, with their model, it's, you know, with fitness, people start working out and they walk into a gym and they see a thousand different mm-hmm. things. Like, what do I yep. do? When you walk into F45, your weights are already on the ground. There's a tape, there's a chart on the wall that shows you exactly what you're going to do. There's somebody's going to walk you through each of them. Mm-hmm. You literally have to show up and follow directions. You don't have to think. You don't have to come up with an idea of what, okay, is today leg? Nope, they have it figured out. You just show up and wear whatever you need to wear, yep. wear your nice shoes, and get after it, as opposed to walk in. And I've worked out since I was in high school. I was in a weightlifting thing in high school, mm-hmm. and I still walk into gyms and go, what the heck am I supposed to do today? I'm here. I did the first part. I got here. Now, who's going to walk me through this? And and that's where, like, the CrossFit world, the F45 mm-hmm. world, Orange Theory, all these show up and do the work we tell you to do. Mm-hmm. They make it easy to show up and make all you have to do is make the decision to get there. Once you're there, they'll take care of the rest. Mm-hmm. And that's a way we need to start thinking in education.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Registration. If you show up, we'll do the rest.
Yeah.
Bring your information. We got you. That kind of stuff. So coming up with different ways to change that is one thing I've been talking about. Mm-hmm. We've all been talking about for a while, because those registration processes are a beating. Especially now that I'm experiencing it firsthand, having to do it for my kids.
Yeah. And that's just one kid, you know, but there is a barrier where people feel like it's too intimidating to move into the fitness world. You know, I don't know how to use that machine, and I look like an idiot if I use it. It's for my legs, but I used it for my arms, and oh boy. That's how a lot of people are coming into education. It's like, I wasn't good at school. This whole thing is too intimidating. And so they're going to put up that wall first before they can look stupid. And we, you know, we talk mm-hmm. about in education all the time about how we need to get to students and we need to help them break down that wall, because we know the kids that are misbehaving are the ones that aren't understanding and don't feel like they belong in that world. It's the same. Those kids grew up and they're the parents that we're dealing with now, and they still feel like school isn't a place for them and it's too intimidating. So they're going to put the wall up first and not grab any opportunity that we're offering. So I think that's a fantastic point, that the intimidation piece is something we need to be paying attention to and mindful of. You just show up, we're going to do the rest for you.
All right, friends, it's time for another My School PR story. Today we're hearing from my good friend and barbecue enthusiast, Derek Dockett. Derek, why don't you go ahead and share why you love school PR so much?
I love it because of the impact. The impact on students, the impact on staff. When you have those teacher appreciation, teacher of the year, banquets, luncheons, whatever it might be that a district does, telling those good stories. I'll throw this in there. I talked about the video streaming that one of the high schools took upon on themselves once we were coming out of COVID. One of the students I really connected with, and whenever I'd go to visit that high school for whatever reason, we'd always chat, we'd always talk about stuff. He did a podcast of his own and had me on as a guest. It's July 25th as we're recording this in 2023. He graduated back in May and is heading to his freshman year of college. We still keep in touch, and he is going on. He wants to have a career doing live sports production. He's going to a school that does ESPN3, ESPN+ production, and he's going to join that crew. And it's awesome to see that he's doing that because of, you know, stuff that he did with me and just picking my brain about stuff. That kind of impact, I don't know, it's something about it I just really, really enjoy. I had the opportunity to talk to him.
So I don't want to skip over a couple of these, but I do want to make sure we have some time to talk about the science of nostalgia.
Sure.
Because I think that that is a huge one when it comes to both positive and negative.
Yes.
Because for some people, thinking back to some times at school are not the greatest times. For other mm-hmm. people, I think back to my high school years and I'm like, I had a blast. It was so much fun and I had great teachers. But I know some of my closest friends, I can see his house. It's across the street from my house. He's like, man, school sucked. He's a teacher though.
Yeah.
And he loves it. He found his way back, but he's like, this was not for me. So let's talk about the science of nostalgia and kind of how that that plays into our school PR world.
Absolutely. The Science of Nostalgia was one of the ones that I was most excited about because, again, going back to glitter and glue sticks and confetti, people feel initially when they see things like Throwback Thursdays, like, oh, great, that's cute, but you make a lot of money. So really, is that what you should be doing? During COVID, I think we were probably all the champions of doing the fun things on Facebook, putting up the lawn signs, creating the bus runs to go to every student's house. And a lot of people felt like, well, you're wasting your time on the, like, they're nice, but they're icing. And I wanted to show people, like, that's not the icing. I mean, it's not better for you, but that's the cake. That's the good stuff. That's the stuff that people need. And the science behind nostalgia is fascinating because there are ways that we remember things, and I think we all know that with your brain, but nostalgia actually activates reward pathways in your brain, and it creates chemical reactions. So when you listen to, you know, that song that you had on mixtape that you had to, you know, wait for the radio announcer to stop talking so you could start recording it, and you remember that from when you were 13, when you hear those things, that triggers a chemical reaction that makes you happy. And in nostalgia, people actually filter out negative memories to integrate the positive ones. So when we bring up nostalgic things for people, it creates emotional resilience for them. It creates a sense of positivity, and it's scientifically proved to reduce anxiety when people are involved with nostalgic things. So when people say, you know, oh, well, yeah, that's a feel-good thing, but, you know, that's not something we can spend a lot of time on. It's not a feel-good thing. You are literally building anxiety reduction into what you do. You're creating positivity, hope in people, resilience in people. And that's what we keep saying, like, these kids have to have grit. Well, nostalgia is a big piece of that and helping them to get that grit. And the second thing that I found fascinating about the study of nostalgia was that it actually can have physical effects on people as well. So there was a study in Emotion Magazine where they put two sets of people in a room. It was cold. And they asked them to rate on a scale how cold the room was. And they gave some people nostalgic mementos and some people just had generic information. But the people that were in the nostalgic room actually felt warmer than the people who were in the room that had just generic things to read. And so we know that there is a physical reaction in the body to nostalgia, a chemical reaction in the brain to nostalgia. And I wanted to share that message with people in PR because I want to empower people to do that alumni roll call on Facebook, do those Throwback Thursdays, create those memory walls, timelines, put effort into the, you know, graphics that you put on your walls and the throwback media that you do, because all of that helps your community to feel connected to you and it helps them to be more positive and resilient. And when it comes down to it, at budget time, that's beneficial to everybody. It's not just about, well, it made them smile and then you spend 4 hours on that. It's about come budget time or come time where we need them to come to us for information, they are going to associate positive feelings with our district because we have put forth these things that have made them feel more resilient and more positive. And it's not icing. It's the core of what we do. You know, school communications is a lot of the heart of what the leadership team does. It's connecting hearts to each other. And that science of nostalgia just spoke to me about how powerful it is and how I wanted to empower other people to say, this is not extra. This is the important that we need to be sharing.
Yeah, when I think of nostalgia and just kind of creating that good feeling, that warm feeling that, hey, what they're doing is good work. And it may be a callback mm-hmm. to something. Hey, you remember the state championship team of tennis from 2012? It could be, hey, last week, Miss Smith's mm-hmm. class did this for vet tech or something. I've always used the comparison yeah. of, you know, building up the good reputation is like a savings account. So by telling the good stories,
yes.
reminding people of the good that's happened in mm-hmm. the past, you're just building up this savings account. And eventually you're going to go outside and your tire's going to be flat. And hopefully you've built up mm-hmm. enough that you, that savings account, that good story, that good news that you've done is not, that one flat tire is not going to just ruin everything and start you back from zero. The big challenge is getting enough good stories and good news in there so when you walk outside and all four of your tires have exploded at once, and that huge news story, that huge negative, whether it's testing, whether it's scandal, whether whatever it is, happens, you have built such a good reputation, and people look back and think about your district in such a positive light that your ambassadors are out there without you calling on them, without you doing Avengers Assemble, anything. You've got people out there that have your back. And so I've always thought of, there's so many good stories from 20 years ago that we could talk about in the district, but who relates to those that's currently here? Is it a new trend? You got to go back to your data. Is our community brand new in the last 10, 15 years? Do they even care about 20 years ago? What happened last week? We can relate to that, but continually reminding people and telling the good things and just kind of, you know, telling the stories that make them think about, oh, when I was in school, I had Miss Laughlin. She was my third grade teacher, and she did this. She told me I talked too much, and that one day I would talk on a stage in front of people, and I did. And, like, that's kind of like my thinking back to public speaking in classes goes back to Miss Laughlin's third grade class. And we can use that stuff to build our brand, to build our reputation, and to continue to show the great things that are happening. And I'm telling you, this conversation could go on for, like, three episodes, and, like, maybe we come back and do this again. I don't know, but I do want to end today with a question that we ask every person who comes on the show, and I didn't prep you this before on purpose. We're in education because at one point we were the kids and someone had our back. So talk to me about a teacher or an administrator or someone along your educational journey that had an impact on you that led you to kind of put you on a path to where you are today.
Oh, man. I've got two English teachers, actually, that come out immediately. And I think, honestly, that's why I wanted to be an English teacher when I went into it. I had one teacher in elementary school who, you know, we all go through our emo poetry phase. I hope I'm not the only one. But I shared a couple of poems with her, and she submitted them to the newspaper and just wrote me a note about, like, how powerful she thought that, you know, my writing was. And I'm sure, I mean, they were not T.S. Eliot. Let's just be clear with each other. But she made me feel like they were in my little fifth grade world. And the power of an adult believing in you, I think we can all agree that that is the best thing that you can give a kid. And my 11th grade English teacher, she did the same. We had to write these essays, you know, and I thought I was a decent writer, and I was consistently ranking in the bottom, and she worked with me and helped me to grow my voice and kind of move from fluff to real substance in my writing and giving kids reading, writing, and speaking skills. That's just the gift that keeps on giving. And so both of them, Mrs. Miller and, I think it was Mrs. Root, were fantastic boons, I would say, to self-confidence in putting yourself out there and the rewards that you can reap when you really work towards something and how good that feels.
And now we're going to relate this back to the conversation, the science of nostalgia. While you were talking, your presence changed just then the way you were it's just, that's what happens, right? So... okay.
Yeah. And she created ambassador out of me. And that's what we're doing. When you, I do high school ones and elementary school ones, and you create ambassadors because now they're invested back all over again. So yeah, I'm an ambassador for English teachers everywhere because of them. And so I think we should be creating ambassadors.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I know, I have a feeling that once our audience listens to this, they're going to want a little more information from you. Maybe they may have a conversation with you. How would we go about, if our audience wanted to reach out and ask you some questions about this topic, how would they go about contacting you?
Either my email or phone is fine.
You just throw your email out there and they can email you. You probably don't want to put your phone out.
work phone. It's S as in Sam, WHALEN as in Nancy, at VVS schools.
Awesome.
Plural.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And if you are listening and you were an attendee at Inspira this past year in St. Louis, you have until October 31st to log in and watch the replays. Highly suggest you log in download this session handout that came with it. It breaks it down beautifully into what the definition of these concepts are, links to the science, key takeaways, and then strategies for involving it in your school PR. Sandra, thank you so much for having this conversation and let me nerd out for a little bit and feel like my boy Spencer Reed from Criminal Minds and just sharing. I can tell you're passionate about this. This is something you really enjoy talking about. So I appreciate you being here and just thanks for doing this with us today.
Oh gosh, thank you for having me. This is so great to be able to share your passion, like you said, with our greater PR community, because we all deserve to be empowered to be seen as the true professionals that we are.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of School PR Happy Hour. I want to thank Sandra for coming on today and blowing my mind with some of this information that we talked about. I hope that you found it useful. I hope you found something you want to study a little bit more about. And I hope there was something today that you plan on using to engage your community as we move forward through the school year. As for us at School PR Happy Hour, we're still planning out season 5. We'd love to feature you or feature a topic you want to hear about. We'd also love to have you as one of our My School PR story folks. If you're interested, reach out to us on Twitter at SPR Happy Hour, over on Instagram, School PR Happy Hour. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep doing what you're doing, and let's go out there and be a little better at our jobs every day.